Hey, Prime members, you can listen to CBS Sunday Morning with Jane Pauley ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
This episode is brought to you in part by Audible. Want to enjoy all your audio entertainment in one app? Check out the Audible app. As a member, you can choose one title a month to keep from the entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. Curious to learn about American theoretical physicist Robert J. Oppenheimer? Take a listen to American Prometheus, which served as the inspiration behind Christopher Nolan's latest film, Oppenheimer. You can download or stream included titles all you want. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days. audible.com/WonderyPod.
Few things are more devastating than a loved one that's gone missing. From Wondery, The Vanished is a podcast where host Marissa Jones tells stories of missing persons that have gone overlooked. Listen to The Vanished podcast wherever you get your podcasts, or you can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts or the Wondery app.
I'm Jane Pauley, and this is a Sunday Morning by Design. We're close to home today, yet towering far above the canyons of Manhattan. Perched high in the sky as we set out on our annual look at cutting-edge design. We're on top of the world, at the highest residence on the planet, a penthouse, 1,550 feet in the air, 131 floors up. On a street that's lately come to be called Billionaire's Row because of its pricey skyscrapers filled with homes few can afford. But that doesn't mean we can't look, and look we will throughout the morning. Faith Saley this morning has no shortage of ups and downs.
You might be floored by how elevators forever changed our lives.
If you were poor, you would live in the very top, because the rich people aren't going to walk all the way up. The elevator flips that. Suddenly the top of the building is the premium rent. Higher up I live, the better the view, the cleaner the air.
It turns real estate on its head.
Yep, quite literally.
How elevators helped us reach new heights, ahead on Sunday Morning.
Kelefasane takes us to Tiffany & Company. Susan Spencer has designs on a perfect night's sleep, plus Serena Altschul on an American clothing classic. And Mo Rocca gets to the bottom of the shoes, no shoes debate. It's a Sunday Morning by Design. And we'll hit the heights next.
Hey, listeners, you need to know that Wondery's shocking true crime podcast Over My Dead Body is back for a fourth season, Gone Hunting. This newest season covers the story of Mike Williams. It was Mike's sixth wedding anniversary when he set off on a hunting trip into the gator-infested swamps of North Florida. He figured he'd be back in time to take his wife Denise out to celebrate, but he never came back. Friends and loved ones feared he met his fate through bad luck and a group of hungry alligators, leaving his young family behind. Except that's not what happened at all. And after 17 years, a kidnapping, and the uncovering of a secret love triangle, the truth would finally be revealed. Enjoy Over My Dead Body, Gone Hunting on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of Over My Dead Body early and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Get started with your free trial at wondery.com/plus.
The highest home on Earth. The penthouse at Central Park Tower, on the park's southern edge, even sits above the clouds. On a clear day, the view stretches some 50 miles, well beyond New York and New Jersey, to Connecticut and the Atlantic Ocean. In the park below, people really do look like ants. Buildings resemble architectural models. Only one World Trade Center is taller. Completed in 2021, His 17,000 square foot apartment has 27 foot ceilings, 7 bedrooms, and 11 bathrooms. The 3-story spiral staircase leads to a 300 person ballroom and 1,400 square foot terrace. A prize for the perfect owner. Ideally, not afraid of heights. Or its sky-high price tag, $250 million. It's a staircase with a story, designed by the people who restored Lady Liberty's torch in New York Harbor. But if stairs aren't your thing, Faith Saley is going up.
New York City, with its neck-craning skyline, would never exist if it wasn't for one feat of engineering.
It literally made the modern city possible.
The elevator, enabling us to move up in the world.
No elevator, no New York, no millions and millions of people living together in such a confined space.
Lee Gray is a professor at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte and an expert on this ascendant history.
There's the signal for this car, so up we go.
In the heyday of train travel, the first passenger elevator was patented in 1859 as a vertical railway by Otis Tufts. It soon became an indulgence for visitors of fine hotels and department stores.
And the experience was that of being pampered in that you walked up, the operator opened the door, you would have a seat, in this wonderfully cushioned bench, a little gas chandelier hanging overhead.
Folks felt safe in these so-called ascending rooms because a different Otis, Elijah Otis, improved safety brakes.
At the 1854 World's Fair, Otis set up a model of his elevator, have it raised up. They would cut the rope. It would fall about maybe 6 inches. His safety would grab on, and he would stand there and demonstrate that this is safe.
Faith in the brake relaxed riders, as did the elevator operator. But when 20th century automated elevators arrived, music was piped in to calm unattended riders. But if you want a taste of the old opulence...
Oh my goodness!
Hi, good morning, welcome.
Thank you.
Debbie Freer operates this 1895 beauty at the Biltmore Estate in Asheville, North Carolina.
So the elevator is original to the house. It's one of the oldest ones in operation in the country.
In the days when the Vanderbilts called this home, they uplifted guests with no luxury spared.
This particular button here is the butler pantry.
What happens if we push that? Do we get a meal or something?
Elevators have come a long way since a system of lifts hoisted animals into the Colosseum. They've been reinvented for speed and spectacle.
It's been considered a mixture of elevator, escalator, and a Ferris wheel.
The Gateway Arch in St. Louis includes 2 trams running along its iconic curve. Designed in 2 weeks, this inclined elevator opened in 1967.
Oh, wow.
Today, Supervisor Kirk Laughlin makes sure over 1 million visitors can proceed up the parabola per year.
You do a total of 180 degrees difference from the base to when you get to the top. It's corrected 180 degrees.
From the jaw-dropping and ear-popping to our day-to-day work commute, elevators empower us to live the high life.
It's like magic. Even the concept of all I have to do is press one button and something wonderful happens.
And then your fate is kind of out of your hands.
Yeah, I never think about it in terms of fate. I am quite literally enjoying the ride.
Sometimes you can't avoid a sleepless night, even in a bedroom as spectacular as this one. We've asked our Susan Spencer to go in search of a perfect night's sleep. And to begin, she says, divide and conquer.
Here's more of your pink.
This New Jersey couple has shared a home for a decade, but they have never shared a bedroom.
Having my own space, that feels comforting to me.
When you were looking for a home, was the bedroom issue a non-negotiable item?
Yes. 2 bedrooms, absolutely necessary.
Freelance writer Rachel Kramer Bussell and abstract painter Drew Griffiths agree.
This is a mess.
It is a mess.
Sleeping apart means sleeping better, but they don't agree on a whole lot else.
This is your place, right?
This is my room, for sure.
How would you react if you had to sleep in his room?
I could do it for a night, but I think more than one night I would be like, where's my stuff?
I like a very empty, clean bed.
When I have nothing in the bed, it feels weird to me.
I like cool. If I could figure out how to like pump air conditioning through my pillow at all times, I probably would.
I like to be very warm. Like I wear pajamas. Sometimes I wear a sweater over pajamas. I have a weighted blanket and a quilt. And then sometimes I put another blanket over my shoulders.
Everything you said, you just diametrically opposed.
Yet they're not alone in sleeping alone. According to a recent survey, one in five American couples keep separate bedrooms.
You know, when people hear separate beds, you know what they think.
Yes. Oh,
that we're not madly in love with each other?
That's one thing.
Yeah. I
and they think, what about sex?
Well, that's what my room's for.
Oh. Yes.
I think in our society, there's a stigma around sleeping apart, almost as if, you know, if you don't sleep in the same bed, there must be something wrong with your relationship. But there's no reason why you have to share the same surface while you're unconscious for 7 hours.
Maybe not, but Jade Wu, a Duke University sleep specialist who's written a book on insomnia, says patients are frequently surprised by her advice.
How often do you actually recommend to couples that they sleep apart?
About 24% of the patients I have. The number one red flag for me is when a middle-aged or older woman tells me that her husband snores like a freight train.
That must happen every day, many times.
Which brings us back to Rachel and Drew, who say snoring is one more reason they sleep apart. But at the end of the day, sleeping apart may be what's kept them together.
Can you ever foresee a day when you would walk into your one beautiful bedroom and you had to share?
I mean, not if we have a choice.
I think it would be too jarring for each of us to give up our separate spaces.
They're like sanctuaries.
Definitely.
We've pulled up stakes and moved uptown. Long before we had skyscrapers, wealthy New Yorkers built magnificent townhomes, some of the very nicest along the Hudson River. A trophy of the Gilded Age, this imposing five-story mansion was designed by high society New York architect Charles P.H. Gilbert for Henry Hobart Vail, head of the American Book Company. Completed in 1897, the townhouse features a rounded limestone and Roman brick front, along with a terrace to take in views of the Hudson River and adjacent Riverside Park. Yet another triumph of famed Central Park designer Frederick Law Olmsted. At the time, this far-off location was seen as country living in the city, well beyond the buildings and bustle of Fifth Avenue and crowds of Lower Manhattan. Over the years, many owners have called the 8-bedroom, 10-bathroom mansion home. Today, a $65 million home filled with art and sculpture, a fitting tribute to its colorful past. Time was Tiffany glass was an essential element of good design, which explains its presence here in the dining room. But even Tiffany needs the occasional redo. With Kellefasane, we check out the new Tiffany flagship in New York.
Don't you just love it?
Love what?
Tiffany's.
I was brought in to regenerate and recreate a cheerful, holly-go-lightly atmosphere, not a stern, intimidating one.
Tiffany & Company's flagship headquarters in New York recently reopened after undergoing a nearly 4-year renovation led by legendary architect Peter Marino.
Used to be dark wood, and now it's white marble.
I'm seeing Tiffany blue all around the place.
Tiffany blue, which is a registered color, this kind of turquoisey blue, which is wonderful.
The main floor's big design attraction is 14 video screens, each 19 feet tall.
It's meant to be amusing and beautiful.
With these images in the windows, you do something that most people can't do, which is you control the weather.
yes, we do.
How do you want someone to feel when they walk into the new Tiffany's for the first time?
Dazzled.
Alexandre Arnault is the 31-year-old executive vice president and the son of the richest man on the planet, Bernard Arnault, who's the founder and CEO of the world's largest luxury goods brand. LVMH bought Tiffany & Company in 2021 for about $16 billion.
Isn't it wonderful?
Alexandre Arnault was born more than 30 years after Tiffany's most famous customer walked in.
Do you have anything but $10?
Still, some things at Tiffany haven't changed.
The variety of merchandise is rather limited.
To be fair, $10 in 1961 is about $101 now. Do you have anything for $101?
We don't have jewelry for $101. You can buy perhaps perfume.
Tiffany president and CEO Anthony LeDrew says the building, though remodeled, remains the bedrock of the company.
We're here, the epicenter of the island, Manhattan, splitting east and west, north and south.
And it hadn't been renovated since opening in 1940.
I think there was really a responsibility to protect what made the identity of this landmark for 83 years.
This is an exceptional necklace.
Victoria Worth Reynolds is Tiffany's chief gemologist.
Like that.
The famed Tiffany diamond, discovered in 1877, made a cameo in the 1961 film.
And you have this here behind some layers of glass. People can line up to look at it as if it were the Mona Lisa.
Yes, it is our Mona Lisa, absolutely. And it has just been reset for the first time in 12 years.
The Tiffany diamond is not for sale.
So what do we have in here?
But just about everything else is.
This is what love is all about.
Uh-oh.
This is an exceptional 10-carat, D-internally flawless, type 2A diamond. This is a Tiffany diamond at its finest.
Now, just roughly speaking, what are we talking about here? New sports car, second home?
We're in all of the above. This is a ring that you would dream about.
For just such occasions, Peter Marino helped design private rooms high above street level. The building has 10 floors, organized by theme, like home design on 6, silver on 5, gold on 4.
The constellation was done in a window display, and we reproduced it on a gigundus scale.
Gigundus, is this an architectural word?
Yes, yes, you have to go to 8 years of architecture school to talk like that.
Finally, there's a penthouse for times when a private room just isn't private enough.
We're up here on the 10th floor, the Sanctum Sanctorum.
What we call the VVIP, by invitation only.
Up here, you can almost forget that this is a jewelry store. Almost.
You should be relaxed, enjoy yourself, and spend a great deal of time.
Spend a great deal of something else, too, perhaps.
hopefully.
Shoes off. It's the rule in more and more homes. But why? Mo Rocca goes in search of answers.
What are we getting on the bottoms of our shoes?
Okay, right now, some dirt, grass, weeds, spores, maybe some manure.
When it comes to the great shoes on, shoes off debate.
And you're okay with all of that going into your home?
Mo, my dog was just rolling in a dead animal. I'm good.
Ask Amy advice columnist Amy Dickinson knows where she stands.
What's happening here? Am I removing or?
You're keeping your shoes on.
Okay. Dickinson, who lives in the Finger Lakes region of New York, grew up on a dairy farm.
I got together with some friends from high school last week, and I was asking them, shoes on, shoes off, and they were all like, oh no, shoes on. And that's when I decided, people who live in the country, we wear shoes indoors.
Dickinson, who wrote a column on this very subject back in 2007, sees the debate as an issue of hospitality.
In my experience, every time I have been asked to remove my shoes, of course I've done so, but I always feel like the host is valuing their floors more than they're valuing their guests or other people's comfort.
Hey.
Hi there.
Hi. Welcome, welcome. Come on in, Mo.
Nice to meet you.
Oh, no.
But for Los Angeles-based writer Jeff Yang, asking guests to remove their shoes and wear slippers...
Left shark, right shark?
...is precisely about hospitality.
I think what changing into slippers does is it gives you a sense of informality and comfort and intimacy, right?
Yang is something of a convert. Growing up on New York's Staten Island, he didn't always abide by house rules.
I was a little rebellious. I mean, that's the extent of the rebellion, right? Not like sex, drugs, and rock and roll. It's like, I'm going to wear my shoes in the house, Mom. And that was part of the reason that my parents felt like a semester spent abroad would be a good thing for me, to learn a little how things are supposed to be done.
So at the age of 8, Yang was sent to stay with his aunt Chi Mei in Taiwan, where shoes are not worn in the house.
I just sort of walked on in thinking, okay, I'm going to give her a big hug. But as I was walking in, she basically raised her hand and said, what do you think you're doing? And I stopped and she said, if you walk into my house with your shoes on, you're walking across my heart.
With those words, Yang's aunt instilled in him a deeper lesson.
When you take off your shoes, you are changing yourself from a stranger to a friend and family member, and as a result, are sort of transformed from outsiders to insiders.
For many in the shoes off camp, it's strictly about hygiene. Nice. Indiana University biogeochemist Gabriel Filippelli has been tracking what the shoes on people are tracking into their homes, including at least one dangerous contaminant.
I took samples of my dust and brought it into the lab, and it was like, oh my God, it was super high for lead.
And by taking your shoes off, you still might have some lead in the house, but significantly less.
That's exactly right. Okay. And I've now done a post-measurement of my own human experiment. It's reduced by more than half.
Reduced by more than half. Okay,
so
that's a lot.
That's a lot.
If you weren't sure where he stands, Filippelli shared his findings in an opinion piece entitled Wearing Shoes in the House is Gross. Are you surprised at how contentious this is?
I was. I mean, it is a deeply ingrained emotional subject, apparently.
And why do you think it is?
I think it taps into something that we can have an argument about that's not political or religious, that is robust, and it doesn't make someone feel terrible afterwards.
So whether you're shoes on or shoes off, consider this footnote from Jeff Yang.
People who want to keep their shoes on could put on booties over their outer shoes. Not a problem. As long as you see the other person, I think there's almost always a way to actually get around these differences.
Kyra Blackwell would be the first to tell you that she's got a dream job.
When you meet somebody and they say, well, what do you do for a living? What do you tell them?
I tell them that I sleep for a living.
That's the life of a professional mattress tester, which is what she does for Wirecutter, the New York Times product recommendation site.
How many mattresses do you think you've tested over the years?
Well, we have tested over 100 mattresses collectively. For the past month, I've been testing a mattress.
And she's always taking her work home with her.
My job entails me having movers bring a mattress into my home, swap out the one that I already have so I can sleep on it for at least a week and really assess if it's a mattress that's worth recommending to people.
It would almost seem that when you got up in the morning, your work was over.
Kind of, right?
Hey y'all, it's Kyra Blackwell.
But judging from her TikTok videos, sleeping is only part of the job. There are some basic mattress test techniques, which she demonstrated.
Well, what do you learn from sitting on the edge of the bed?
Imagine you're putting on your socks or your shoes on your bed. You don't want to like fall off.
Good point.
When you're trying to do that.
Okay. Even more critical than sitting on the edge is lying in the middle.
If I'm laying on my back, do I feel like my hips or my belly is sinking in? If I lay on my side, does my shoulder or my hips feel like they're crushed up against the mattress?
I read somewhere that the average person sleeps like 26 years of their life.
Yeah.
Which is kind of distressing. But so it's important that you get a good night's sleep. And the mattress fits in there where?
Oh, it's the bread and butter.
With so much at stake, Kyra says don't be swayed by price and don't be shy about testing everything out there. Before you decide, you may want to sleep on it.
How would you describe your ideal mattress.
I love like a lofty mattress, like 13 inches in height, and it just feels like I'm in a luxury hotel, essentially.
That's what we should be striving for, exactly. The feeling of a luxury hotel.
5 stars every night.
A Warhol in the bathroom and a dressing room modeled after Coco Chanel's in Paris, with room for all sorts of clothing, including the uniquely American staple Serena Altschul tells us about.
So all kinds of experiments are happening here. Yeah.
At the Eureka Innovation Lab in San Francisco, testing is underway. But you won't find a white coat in this laboratory.
So this is where the magic happens with the laser.
Oh, wow.
Here, you're more likely to find a pair of jeans.
Oh my God, it's on fire.
I mean, Levi's, to me, is kind of the birth of cool.
Protecting that cool is the mission of Levi's design director, Paul O'Neill.
There's so much work in progress.
He considers himself a custodian of the company's many legendary styles.
But this is how it all began.
Including one superior fit.
I mean, we tried to not to touch the 501 so much. Like from its beginnings in 1873 up until the late 1940s, all of the changes that happened were practical.
This year, that iconic pair is celebrating 150 years.
What's the difference between the 501 and some of the other models and jeans that you could try on and buy at Levi's?
Well, it's always a straight blue jean. I mean, when we look at other fits, we've got like skinnies, flares, bell bottoms, you know, all bells and whistles, but the 501 always just remains very simple and classic.
So it's not going to follow the trends, period.
No, it's something you can rely on.
Finding a reliable and durable pair of pants was the goal of businessman Levi Strauss and his tailor, Jacob Davis.
This is an 1873 or 1874 model year.
Levi's historian, Tracy Panic, says those trusty pants weren't possible until Davis added a rivet, creating the modern-day blue jean.
He came up with the idea of adding a little bit of metal in the pockets where your hands are going in and out, and to stop them from ripping, you added a little bit of that metal, and it stopped that.
But why the number 501?
It's simply a lot number, a simple way to keep records. 501 is the best top of the line.
Top of the line, but the 501 was made for everyday blue-collar workers.
At the time, they were called overalls because you'd pull them up over your clothes to have this protective outer garment.
Nowadays, just about everyone has worn a pair of Levi's, from presidents to hippies to Hollywood.
Hey, Johnny, what are you rebelling against?
What do you got?
They were even part of Steve Jobs' uniform.
But we've got something unusual on his. Check out all the buttons.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So he did that himself. He put in suspender buttons. Like, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
As for the most efficient way to break in a new pair of 501s, Paul O'Neill has the secret.
You can sit in the bathtub in them. If you buy a pair of jeans that are the right size for you, but maybe a bit too long in the leg to allow the shrinkage, and if you sit in the tub, the jeans will mold to your body shape. So you'll truly get a unique pair of 501s.
Tricks of the trade, I love it. Yeah.
This historic townhouse is filled with precious, if breakable, objects. But breakable doesn't have to mean irreplaceable. Nancy Giles explains.
This is your happy place?
I love coming here.
When 78-year-old Bob Page steps inside True Treasures Consignment Store in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida.
This is a coupe-shaped bowl.
He can't quite help himself.
We especially need those accent plates.
It's a lot like an adult Easter egg hunt.
You never know what you're going to find.
Page quit his high-paying accounting job more than 4 decades ago to rummage through used china. Soon, people began paying him to find hard-to-find tableware.
This is such an unlikely venture. But it was a need that had never been filled.
Plates, cups, saucers. I mean, what is the deal with tableware? They're just plates.
Oftentimes, it's not just a plate to somebody. It's something really personal and sentimental, and it's memories, things in the past but not forgotten.
Paige turned the idea of replacing china and the memories that go along with it into Replacements, a multi-million dollar company he founded and still runs just outside of Greensboro, North Carolina. The size of 8 football fields, it's stacked to the rafters with more than 11 million pieces.
Welcome to our Great Wall of China.
Look at
this wall features our 500 most popular china
patterns. I love it. Scott Fleming is the company's current president and says they can replace the irreplaceable.
We're the world's largest supplier of active and discontinued tableware. If there's a pattern that you're looking for, you break a piece, you can email us, you can give us a call, visit us on the website.
I can call you guys up and be pretty assured that you'll find it?
That's what we specialize in, the hard to find.
Did you break a treasured family plate? Want to replicate the Ricardo's china from the classic sitcom I Love Lucy? Are you desperate for the glass from the Fancy Feast cat food commercials? Their dish detectives are on the case. Replacements has been a go-to for some high-profile customers, too.
We have replaced pieces in our history for the Vatican. We've replaced pieces for prominent senators and politicians.
China dates back centuries and was often seen as a status symbol. These patterns in the company's museum are from the 1700s.
Look at the detail and look at the serrated edges.
That is gold.
That is
it's
gold.
Not gold plate.
It
That's
is not
gold.
Gold plate. That is gold.
I've always wanted to have some of the more unique pieces, and it's hard to find them.
For Sydney Mason Barrett and Linda Peterson, who traveled from Massachusetts to stock up on Fiesta ware, it's not about the status.
When you have friends over, it's a party before you even get started. It's
yeah,
fun.
The company also does on-site inspection and restoration and has a call center and a clothing charity. And if you need help incorporating your newfound pieces, they've got that covered too.
Tablescaping is the art of creating an experience at the table.
Julie Robbins is a product specialist at Replacements and says there's no wrong way to mix and match.
Having a whole presentation, that effort, that arrangement, those little details, that is love, that is welcome to my home.
For founder Bob Page, setting the table and breaking bread is about connecting the present with the past.
Sometimes you think, if that piece could just talk, what stories would they tell? There's just a tremendous amount of history there.
From LA to Chicago to New York. Noise is one big reason why 1 in 3 American adults doesn't get enough sleep.
You might have an upstairs neighbor that has loud shoes, garbage trucks at 3 a.m. in the morning, ambulances, fire trucks.
Psychologist Matthew Eben learned all about noisy nights years ago, when he bought an apartment in Queens, New York.
It was unbelievably loud. It was about a half block away from the LIRR.
The Long Island Railroad.
Exactly.
Well, that's loud.
There was a bus that went up a hill in front of the apartment, and there was an ambulance that liked to park across the street.
This is torture.
It was torture.
A desperate man who didn't want to move, he turned to a white noise machine. Give me the layman's explanation of what white noise actually is.
It's the sound of a fan. It's the sound of an air conditioner. So if you have a constant noise, which is a little louder than these intrusions, you won't be woken up by the intrusions.
It seems odd in a way that the solution to too much noise is more noise.
Right.
That paradox intrigued Eben,
yes,
a sleep specialist at Weill Cornell Medicine and New York Presbyterian. His research confirmed white noise's potential benefits.
What we found in our study is they slept more in general with the white noise maker than without it, and they also fell asleep a bit faster.
At his offices, we sampled an array of machines, emitting everything from basic white noise.
Sounds a little bit like a fan.
Right.
To so-called pink noise.
That sounds like the ocean.
It does.
Which uses lower frequencies and which some research suggests can help with memory.
What's that?
It sounds like a tropical rainforest.
And then there were a bunch of other random noises.
Loud rain.
Yeah, loud rain. Oh, I'm not even gonna guess what that is.
It sounds like a heartbeat.
Is that gonna help anybody sleep?
I wouldn't use that.
But white noise is often just what the doctor ordered.
So this is sort of a lullaby for adults, right?
Yeah, I guess
so. Is that fair?
I think that's fair.
Thank you for listening. Please join us when our trumpet sounds again next Sunday morning.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to CBS Sunday Morning with Jane Pauley ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.